22 degrees a little bit later on. A little chilly to start your day. 13 right now. Sunny day again tomorrow, then showers by Friday, Saturday. This is the final few days officially of spring. Then we into summer. And we know what summer means in Ottawa. Summer will mean this summer football. Finally, CFL football officially back as of this week, announced by the Board of Governors Monday, unanimous approval to play a 14-game schedule. And yesterday they announced the schedule. And all of the Eastern Canadian teams, the three in Ontario and Montreal, will all begin the season on the road, playing in the West or on a bye. Ottawa will not play its first home game until week four. So in late August, Hamilton will not play its first home game until September, into week five. So understandably, they're trying to drag things out as long as they can to make sure that they can open up things if things continue to be in a positive direction as far as getting more fans into home games. So understandable the decision, but bottom line is very positive developments this week regarding finally getting football back. And joining us to talk about it, and I'm sure a guy who's pretty excited, is Paul Lapolis, the head coach of the Ottawa Redblacks. How are you doing this morning, Coach?
Great. Yeah, thanks for having me on.
Yeah, thanks a lot for coming on. we're reminiscing about the time when you were hired in December of 2019. Is that right?
Yeah.
Okay. How long ago does that seem to you? Because it seems like a long time ago to us.
Yeah, it's just crazy. You think about, I've been hired that long ago. I've moved here in May last year. So, and that it's, you know, coming up on almost 2 years and I haven't coached a game yet. So yeah, we're pretty excited to get football started.
All right. So what does the announcement of Monday, the schedule coming out yesterday, like how does that now officially change things for you and your staff?
Well, you know, there was just a couple of things that, you know, like once the CFL Players Association ratified their agreement, couple of things from practice training camp we had to adjust and everything, so that's kind of what I'm working on today. But you know, you scripted training camp a year ago, you've done so many things in preparation, you've watched all the other teams in the league and prepared. So you know, the nice thing is it's not like work always creates itself, but at least you're somewhat ahead of the game, if that makes sense. But yeah, there is a finality to it, like, oh my god, I'm actually, you know, it's going to be back to long hours in the office, which we love to do and be part of, and it's pretty exciting.
Like playing, coaching in pro football can be a grind. Is it almost refreshing for you and the entire staff to have had a bit of time off, Lapo, and now can really hit with everyone super recharged?
Well, yes, yeah, certainly. Like, you know, last night was my daughter's eighth birthday. That would have been something I would have been in the middle of training camp. So obviously there's been a lot of great things from that aspect personally. You know, the ability to move out here, normally if your family moves out while you're in football season, you don't do a thing. So I was able to be part of that process and help all those things. So yeah, and also to get to know the city of Ottawa and you know, basically kind of do a little exploration. So it's not a foreign entity to my family when they got here and I'm working, you know, 18-hour days. So that was been really good. But you know, we came out here to become somebody who can just love coaching the game and getting the office each day. So that's what we're looking forward to, getting back in the office.
What was the house like during the Habs Jet series?
Kind of somber. Yeah, yeah.
Your wife is from Winnipeg, right?
Yeah. You know, we have a couple of good friends that came over who were from Winnipeg that we've met out here, and the goalie for the Habs is really good, man. The Jets did not look great, so yeah. That's a, you know, from, I'm not a huge hockey person, but I'll still follow those guys who, you know, shove they off Paul Maurice were excellent people to me, and I thought that organization did a good job from an ownership perspective.
With Paul Lapolis, head coach of the Red Blacks. So, again, everything is still evolving, Paul. You do have some dates. So as far as training camp goes, are there any restrictions that are going to be in place for you and your staff regarding players, what you can do, what you can't do from a we'll call it a so-called typical training camp?
Oh yeah, yeah. There's part of our return to play is a huge document of the protocols that we have to follow, the COVID protocols. So, you know, those are things we've spec'd out a couple of months ago. They hit on maybe a month ago, and then a couple of weeks ago, and then we'll have another meeting next week on. So, yeah, like we will have to try to, you know, as vaccinations increase and, you know, the government adapts their ability for people to come over the border, we'll have to do the same thing. But we're going to start with very stringent rules and very stringent applications. So, you know, there's no transmission of any virus.
With all the time on and with COVID, all time off, sorry, is it a smaller training camp and almost kind of the roster we'll see come opening night?
Well, the hard part is going to be, I guess the harder part is no preseason games. So, you know, how do you, it's really hard. You're trying to bring guys in, and especially we're a whole new staff. So we have a, you know, whole new staff. We've got to teach a whole new system. So it's a little bit behind the eight ball compared to somebody who's been in the same system for 5 years with a veteran team. So we have to kind of impart our knowledge to the players and also evaluate the players to see if they fit our systems. And so that's going to be the challenge, especially without preseason games. So it's very hard to simulate that speed. We'll do our best to do that in practice situations.
Coach-quarterback combination is the biggest thing in football, and at least you, I would think, would have a very good comfort level with Matt Nichols, and that will help that part of it, will it not?
Yeah, you know, and more than a comfort level is Matt's been a successful quarterback, right? So, you know, like, if Matt, you know, you're just always looking for guys who've done it at a high level, performed at a high level, and Matt's, you know, got a lot of experience in the business and played well and led his teams to wins, and does a lot of things we think are successful football teams do. You know, put that aside, on top of that I do have a relationship with him, and I know what I'm going to get on an everyday basis from him. I'll get on the field, and his leadership and his intelligence is by far as good as anybody I've ever been around. Yeah, you add that to the mix, and it's a good get for us.
He was on the station, Matt was, a couple of days ago, and one of the things he talked about was the fact that a lot of the so-called pundits, a lot of the experts have picked your team to not be very good this year, coming off a 3-15 season the last time they played football in 2019, and he kind of intimated that it would be, for him at least, you know, kind of a rallying point. Are you at all, do you print t-shirts saying nobody respects it? Do you play that card at all as a coach, or do you leave that up to the players?
Well, you know, I certainly kind of leave most of that up to the players and what gets them motivated. I don't think a motivation for me is to talk about, you know, the noise from the outside. That's something we will never talk about. We'll have posters in our room that talk about, you know, don't worry about the noise inside or outside the building, right? Like, it's only, we're going to control our destiny by what we do. So for me to say that every day and then start saying, look what these guys said about you, you know, I'm kind of not doing what I talk about. So, you know, whether we want to be consistent and not worry about the noise outside the building, whether we win games by 50 or lose games by 50. You just got to worry about your process on a daily basis. So I think if I start going, look at this, look what these people said, or this or that, then I'm not being true to what we believe.
You're always an upbeat guy, super optimistic, but honestly, and you're positive about the new roster. Is this a completely unknown coming into a year, new staff, new job, lots of new players, and quite simply haven't been off for as long, not even knowing what some of the athletes will look like when they come into camp?
Well, I think that's across the league, right? You're going to have a number of teams, you know, that maybe have older players that you're like, wow, like, you know, have those guys been training like they need to? Or you may have some younger players that you're not sure if they don't have the veteran experience to know how to train, or but maybe the younger guys are in better shape. It's going to be an interesting thing for all nine teams to kind of figure out, you know, go through this process and figure out, and then you don't get playing football. So it's, we'll find our best to adapt, improvise, and overcome.
With Paul Appelese, head coach of the Red Blacks. So the schedule came out yesterday, coach, and you're going to start on the road against the Elks. That still seems weird to me to say. Then you got a bye, then you're on the road again in Sask, and you don't play at home for the first until week four, so 3 weeks into the season. Sometimes, you know, being out on the road and the so-called having the guys together can be a galvanizing thing. How do you look at the schedule, the way it's laid out, and whether it works for you or not?
Yeah, you know, I think for us is, you know, going on the road for the first couple of weeks, hopefully that helps our cause from a, get as many fans in the stands as possible. And again, the schedule is what the schedule is. We got to go on the road and beat people to get where we want to go. So you just kind of, you know, go through the process, educate players what to do. And I, you know, as I always say to the guys, is no better feeling than going into somebody else's house and, you know, and doing your best to try to make it a quiet stadium. So we'll do our best on the road to try to start that process and go from there.
One of the selling points of football here in Ottawa, and you would know this as a visiting coach, is that it is a great atmosphere at TD Place, and the building is usually full or close to full. Chances are, at least to start the season, it won't be. How much of an impact do you think that might have in terms of so-called home field advantage?
Well, you know, I think, you know, we've just got to make sure that, you know, if we play out in Edmonton, Saskatchewan, the beginning of the year, when they're, you know, they're going to have probably a fully open stadium. So maybe, you know, a Saskatchewan be a sellout crowd. We just got to make sure in training camp, we've already scheduled to make sure we do, you know, silent cadences and just make sure we can handle the crowd noise. Like, you just got to take that factor out of it and be able to execute with crowd noise. So, and as we get opened up, I'm sure the crowd noise in Ottawa is going to become something that we're proud of here too.
How pumped are the players to get back to work and quite simply get paid again?
Yeah, they're ecstatic, you know, and hats off to them for going through all this process. And, you know, it's another thing where you're like, there's a lot of factors out of our control, and sometimes you don't have great information for them until you get more information on what's going on with the virus. So, you know, they overcame a lot and did, you know, they're ecstatic to go. I've talked to a couple of guys yesterday and they're just so excited to just sit in the room and start learning systems. And, you know, it's kind of new to them. So it's a whole new system. So they're all excited to get going and start building something.
I wanted to ask you about Jalen Saunders, who you guys signed. Now he's, you know, was in an off-season car accident, went on the retirement list yesterday, but I guess that allows you to retain his rights. I don't know if you've ended up talking to him or Marcel has. Is the hope that perhaps at some point he may be able to join you? And is it were you counting on him to be a big part of your offense?
Yeah, you know, he's a talented football player, you know, and then when the injury happened, you know, you just got to understand, like, he's lucky to walk out of that car alive. So, you know, just weren't sure where you would be from a health standpoint at training camp in the beginning of the season. So probably the best thing was to do is, you know, we retire him and we can revisit it, and, you know, and gives him an opportunity to get healed up and then we can revisit it down the road.
All right, good stuff. Appreciate the insight, Coach. Glad to hear everything is on track to being back out on the field, and we will chat often as the season gets set to start and kicks off in the month of August. Thanks for the time this morning.
Okay, thanks, guys. Take care.
There's Paul Lapolis, head coach of the Ottawa Redblacks, in the Gabriel Pizza Hotline. Gabriel Pizza, the bigger, better pizza. Order online at GabrielPizza.com.
Yeah, and you got to imagine, JR, for everybody, interesting. I don't know if it's the players. You, in a long off season, can get in shape, out of shape, back and forth. For the coaches, you're making a game plan, always redoing it. And I'd have one policy for this training camp. If a player walks in and you don't recognize him, you're going to cut him.
But what about in a good way?
Well, that's true. That's true. That could be different. But in a bad way?
Yes.
Like, I've got to think.
The 20-pound rule?
Well, just like society. I mean, it'd be really interesting to see. And, hey, for an older player, you're always hungry. Maybe for a guy like Matt Nichols, who only played 9 games a couple of years ago, time off at 34 is good. You know, for other guys, do you get back into the groove, you know, for a contact sport? And then for younger guys, did you take care of yourself?
Interesting news, of all people, breaking the news on an NBA story from Adam Schefter, who normally breaks all the news with the NFL, but is a big basketball fan as well, and he's got lots of sources everywhere. Tweets this morning, in the last 5 minutes, that Kawhi Leonard could miss the remainder of the Western Conference semifinal with the Utah Jazz with a knee injury.
Wow,
that series
wow.
tied at 2 games apiece. Game 5 is scheduled for tonight. So that's some breaking news. Kawhi Leonard, potentially, according to Adam Schefter, out for the remainder of the semifinal. Wow. And then once they get to the conference final, this story also out in the last 10 minutes or so, that Chris Paul of the Phoenix Suns has entered the league's COVID protocols. List is on the list as of today. Now, doesn't mean necessarily that he's tested positive, could mean an exposure, but the stories intimate that it could affect his availability in the Western Conference final. Yeah. But of course, Phoenix is already through And if the Utah Clippers series ends up going seven games, it would not start the Western Conference Final for about another week or so. So yeah, that might be enough time for Chris Paul to, if he even has it, to get through it and be out the other side. But that also breaking NBA news this morning.
Boy,
so both Kawhi Leonard and Chris Paul.
Yeah, think back to AD in the Lakers series. Think of what's going on in Brooklyn. We're having injuries to the stars. And as far as Mr. Kawhi Leonard, is this the same knee that goes all the way back to San Antonio why he did load management here in Toronto?
Yeah. Yeah,
that,
absolutely.
That's been going on for a long time.
Yeah. All right, 9:30, we'll take a break. Come back with much more as we continue along here on this Wednesday, double game day. We've got some Euro 2020 action this afternoon at 3 with Italy taking on Switzerland. And then tonight we've got the Habs and the Knights at 9 o'clock on TSN 1200.
Is TSN 1200.
My old adage is you need a fin to win, and that refers mostly to hockey.
Yeah.
And it's, you know, great. I don't know if a rivalry is a great, in terms of sports, I guess it's a rivalry in terms of real life. And you visited there many times, Simmer. Would you say that the Finns would have a very large chip on their shoulder when it comes to the Russians?
They hate the Russians.
Yes, exactly. So we talk about a great hockey rivalry playing itself out right now at the Euro 2020 is a soccer rivalry. Yeah, those two teams, the Finns and the Russians, are going head-to-head. And I just watched a play at the back post where a Finnish defender... Now, it was all trying to play the ball. I get all that, but there's a Russian guy going in. He's trying to hit the net to finish. Anyway, one guy ends up crashing into the post. He flips around, kicks a guy, ends up kicking the guy inadvertently in the head. Like, they are playing it from the tips, just like they do in hockey on the soccer pitch this morning.
Yeah, great point. It's funny because you have the Sweden-Finland rivalry, and Sweden kind of looks down at Finland, but I think there's a bit of a mutual respect there, where the other way, JR, is just absolutely despise them. My Russian friends call them the woodchoppers, being the Finns. And
that's not in a respectful
way. No, exactly. And they get at it, and you're right, it is. And also funny, and also behind the scenes hockey-wise, they had a pretty open border during the Cold War. And they were actually a pretty good influence as far as Finland hockey from a coaching standpoint. But also, if you see the population, it's a bit of a mix of Scandinavian, Eastern European. But like you said, as far as the country, these are where it goes to another level. Like, I wouldn't even know, like, what would you say from a Canadian perspective? Like, does that exist where, like, a Latvian despises a Russian? The Czech Republic hates Russia. The Slovaks hate the Czechs. Like, I guess at the end of the day, we don't really have that, do we?
In terms of sports?
Well, just but it takes to another level because of the human aspect, like because of the historic, like the Netherlands hates Germany. Well, this isn't just a soccer match. This is just you despise the way your country was treated, right?
I think in Canada we feel a moral superiority to everybody, pretty much.
Yeah, that's
true.
We
have a passive aggressive attitude where we think and we know we're the best place in the world. Yeah. We just don't really say it. So
you would agree probably Greenland would end up being that?
Yes.
Or Iceland?
Yeah. I would say from a sports point of view, we do have a bit of an inferiority complex when it comes to, except for hockey, when it comes to the United States.
Oh, and even that's close, I think.
It's getting closer.
But I mean, I don't like the U.S. I don't like it. But again, it's not quite to the same. Like I said, you're pointing out there, like as a Finnish person, you're historically taught to, you know, understand what the Russians did to your country and, hey, end up taking part of your land after World War II.
Right. Whereas the Canada-U.S. thing, I mean, we got to go back to, you know, like War of 1812 kind of
exactly.
stuff, right? And I don't know, but I mean, I'm old, but I'm not that old. That I personally didn't live through it, so I can't quite feel it that way. Anyway, it is a scoreless match. They are 41 minutes into the first half between Finland and Russia. We'll keep our eye on that game for you, and we'll have our match of the day coming up this afternoon. Italy goes for its second straight win, taking on Switzerland. 3 o'clock will be the kickoff here on TSN 1200. Let's take you to yesterday. The match of the day was France and Germany. There was only one goal scored in the game, and unfortunately for the Germans, was not a goal scored by France.
Here comes Pogba for France. Pogba with the outside of his boot playing an angle ball over the top. It's driven across. Oh, it's a golden goal. It's gone in off Hummels, and France have the lead. Driven across at pace. and Hummels in the six-yard box could do nothing other than deflect it high into his own net.
Well, he actually, what he could have done was actually deflected it over the net. You know, when you say he only could have done that, no, he could have actually put it. Yeah. That was a tough play. For those that haven't seen it, it was the old shin, and he was trying to, you know, he's trying to defend, trying to keep the ball from coming into the box and getting to the offensive guy, the striker. But unfortunately, puts in the back of his own onion bag, and that ends up being the only goal of the game. France beats Germany in the marquee matchup of all the first games of the tournament. 1-0 is the final.
Yeah, and I don't know. They had some stat share. First time somebody's ever scored on their goal. That is credited to somebody, right?
Like, no. Okay. Goes down as an own goal.
Okay, because what I saw the other day, who the hell was it? It was one of the lesser countries. A fellow went in and scored. Because it hit the post and hit the goalie, he didn't get credit for the goal. So that's standard that if you don't score it directly, you don't get credit for it?
I don't know about in that circumstance you describe how it works. I know if the guy directly kicks it into his own net, that goes down as an own goal.
Yeah, no, it was the same thing. Like I said, the guy had a real nice move. I can't remember what game it was. He came off the left side here, deked out a couple guys, went short side, hit the post, hit the goalie, and they said, nope, because of that, he doesn't get it. But that one right there, that's almost Colombian-esque like that. That is redirecting it right in. And then to add in injury to insult was later in the game, the poor German guy laying down in the box and he gets hit in the head, stops it from going in, right?
I think that was being whistled.
Oh, was it?
That was being whistled down because there was a foul.
Oh, okay.
But yeah, it was comical to look at it initially because it goes down and the ball's going in the net and it hits his own guy. Yeah. Anyway, that was the... Well, on paper, at least the best of the matchups in round one. As mentioned, Italy will play today. Meanwhile, elsewhere on the pitch, big game for Canada last night, taking on Haiti in the second game. This is World Cup qualifying, second round, second leg. Canada was up 1-0 going into the second leg, so all they needed was a win or a draw. Scoreless in the second half, so it's still a little bit tenuous. And then this happened.
Pierre, giveaway. LaFrance. Two center backs being good tonight for Haiti. Oh no, look out! What a mistake! Can you believe that happened? Oh my word! Duverger, Canadian born, doing a solid to his country. The most unlikely of goals you will ever see.
Yeah, you got your soccer howlers, your bad goals, and then you had that last night. And again, if you haven't seen the highlight, we tweeted it out. It's on SportsCenter. It'll go down as one of the worst plays of the year when they do the countdown at the end of the year. So this is Duvernay, I believe his name is, the Haitian goaltender, who's actually from Montreal. One of those pass backs from the defender. He's under pressure, but not immediate pressure. He kind of casuals it a little bit. The ball is hopping a little bit. It kind of gets in between his legs, skittering toward the goal line, but he's still got time. He turns around. And as he goes to kick it out the other side, he hits it with his plant foot as he's swinging his other leg and puts it into his own net for one of the absolute worst goals you're ever going to see in soccer.
Yeah, it really is. And when you do a solid, I thought you're taking a dump chair. Is that kind of the same analogy?
No.
Oh, okay. But am I missing something here?
Well, doing a solid is you're helping somebody out.
Oh, okay. Okay. Yeah. I thought that was you're going to the bathroom.
They're solid. And I don't want to get into descriptions. It depends on what you've eaten.
But and I also
you've been to Arby's. I think.
But I kind of get the sense he feels
Arby's,
like he's
eh?
Like I feel like he's taking a dump on for his own team and he's helping Canada. Like the fix is in.
Oh, wow.
That's what I'm doing a solid. Like,
Could an 8-year old goalkeeper do better than that? I'm pretty sure the answer is yes.
Like it's just like, but the crazy thing is, look, the fact that the ball gets between his legs in the first place. Okay, but
he's got lots of time to regroup.
Second opportunity. It's just dribbling along so slowly. It's like, screwed that up. I'll just plant it here, and I'll just kick it out the other side. And then, an uncoordinated 8-year-old hammer, to your point, would put that goal that.
The fine ice hockey goaltender, guys, so the puck goes behind you, and all of a sudden you're stretching out with your stick, and he knocks it in once in a while. Okay, you understand, right? It's your last ditch to do it. I mean, this guy had plenty of time to go back, and I really feel JR, based on the corruption in Haiti, I'm not getting on the flight back. You know, the coaching staff and everyone's meeting you and saying, listen, we want you to come back, and, you know, everybody wants to say hi to you when you're back in Haiti. Like, I'm not getting on that plane. I'm just going right back to Montreal.
Yeah.
I don't think that would be in his best interest.
Anyway, that got the scoring started for Canada and really put the Haitians behind the eight ball, because then they needed two more goals, and, well, they didn't end up scoring any when it was all said and done. They lose the game 3-0. They lose the series on aggregate, best of the home and away, 4-0. So Canada into the final eight of qualifying for the World Cup for the first time in 24 years. 1997, believe it or not, was the last time Canada got this far. Credit to John Herdman, who did such a great job with our women's national team. He's come on board with the men's team. And, a coach is as good as his best talent is. That we have not seen talent at this level for Canada, maybe ever, in Alphonso Davies and Jonathan David, of course, is from Ottawa. Yeah. Two of the best players that, and Davies in particular, that this country has ever produced. And he's got them right, you know, and they're 21 years old each, right? Like, they're just, you know, just touching the edges of what they're going to be capable of. And there are lots of coaches given lots of good players who aren't able to get it done. So credit to John Herdman so far.
Yeah.
Still a long way to go. Three teams of the eight will go through. So we'll write it in pen that that Mexico and U.S. will be two of the eight, which leaves the last six teams, including Canada, to battle for the one spot. Now, there is the fourth place finisher does get to play a one-game playoff against another place in the world. I think it's like Australia or New Zealand for a final spot.
Okay.
But three of the eight definitely get through. Yeah. AJ, who follows us as closely as anybody, thinks that Canada has the third best team, or the third best amount of talent.
Yeah.
So the door is open for Canada to qualify for next year's World Cup, which would be absolutely awesome considering it's coming here in 2026.
Yeah, and has that ever been decided, JR? I know the United States and Mexico are automatically in. That was up in the air as far as Canada,
I don't think
right?
it's been definitive yet.
And also there may be an expanded field for it. So.
And then we'd be in for sure. But you want to go in the front door.
God,
right? You want to back in
because
you're a host team.
Well, and I also, for the two young stars, I'm curious to see them against Mexico and against the United States, how fired up. And for the Herd Dog, first of all, I love him, the way he looks and represents. But whoever's handling his career, very smart time to come into the women's program, also an equally smart time to exit the women's program, and a very smart time to enter the men's program. So, as you
always
say,
always good when you're coming up, not when you're going, not when you peaked.
It feels like on both accounts, and good for him. And it is. We've had him on. You've said it. He just looks like exactly what you want at the face of a program. Everything he says, you kind of believe in. And on the men's side, it's going to be a fun role here for Canada, and hopefully we'll get into this one.
My wife, a very big fan of John Herdman.
Yeah.
That's a fine figure in a white dress shirt on the sideline.
Yeah, exactly. He's got the whole look, and you got the accent just makes them melt, right?
Well, exactly. And if you have a British accent, or you talk with a British accent, we assume that you know everything about soccer.
Yeah. And you have bad teeth.
By the way, not in his case. The simmer. The Russians have scored, by the way, late in first half in injury time. They're up on the Finns. Some reason, I've been watching the entire, show going on.
Yeah.
There's 6 minutes of injury time in the first half.
Ooh.
So I don't know what's been going on.
A lot of flopping going on.
Yeah, Hungary. I watched the Hungary-Portugal game yesterday. It was brutal.
Yeah.
Just brutal.
Who was flopping? Both teams?
Both teams.
See, once one starts.
And it goes back. There was a Portugal-Netherlands game way back in the day, which was one of the worst ever. One of the worst officiated games. Players being thrown out. The flopping was just. And the Dutch except for Robin, don't normally do it. Like, there are certainly countries and certainly parts of the world where it's accepted. Part of it.
Yeah.
And in parts of the Euro, you see some teams where they just don't do it at all, and you see other teams where it's an integral part of what they do. And again, if for a lot of casual fans who tune into big events like this, they'll watch this, and it's what drives them crazy about the sport.
Yeah.
Soccer people would tell you it is a part of the sport, and it's an accepted part of the sport, whether you like it or not. But for the uninitiated, it is what turns them off of the sport.
Yeah, and for the refs, my oh my, I know they have the some of the replay on things, JR, but it is hard in real time. Guys going for a ball, not even touch, all of a sudden he ends up diving.
I'm actually surprised that they do as well as they do.
I agree. Yeah.
You know, again, they're running, so it's not like skaters in hockey where it's fast, but still, you got two guys coming together. Yeah. Did that guy hit him in the head with his hand?
Yeah.
You know, the amount of stuff they get right is pretty good.
Yeah, even the handball. And I'll also say, not always, but would you agree that the diving and being flamboyant and very emotional is, you know, it's kind of a South American thing as well? You know, it's almost you're playing to the crowd, right? It's expected that, you know, you think of Maradona or any of the great players.
Yep. A couple of things. Let's look at this day in sports history quickly.
Okay.
And let's see here. For the first time on this day, June 16th, 1985, the NHL draft was not held in Montreal for the first time.
Yeah.
It was actually held in Toronto.
Yeah, yeah.
And don't know that it was, wouldn't have been planned this way, but the Leafs ended up with the first pick that year in 1985, and Simmer chose?
Yeah, Wendell Clark.
Wendell Clark, number one pick in the draft on this day in 1985.
Yeah, and that was at the convention center, and a lot of my buddies or people I played with, including, remember the Islanders had two picks, which would have been Derek King and Brad Delgarno. LA had two picks, which would have been Craig Duncanson and Gratton.
Oh, good memory.
And I think back to that draft as far as goalies, because I was such a big fan at that time, JR. That would have been the draft of Sean Burke to Kay Whitmore to Troy Gamble to Mike Richter. Mike Richter being drafted out of the prep school down in Lake Placid. So I was such a big hockey fan at that time. And for the Washington Capitals, first pick in that was Ivan Korovo, who did not have much of a career at that point. But yeah, I could go through that all day. But you're right. And then 86, my year went back to the Montreal Forum.
1990, the draft was also held on this day in 1990. How about this top five?
Yeah.
Owen Nolan, number one. Peter Nedved, number two. Keith Primo, number three. Mike Ricci, number four. Jaromir Jagr, number five. Marty Brodeur, number 20.
I know.
That top five, though, that's if we go down a list of all-time great top fives, that would be pretty close to it.
Would you agree major mistake by the first four, though?
Jagr ends up, when it's all said and done, having the best career.
Yeah,
for
but
sure.
But you're right at the time. And the hype around Mike Ricci at the time, I'm sorry, that's Nolan, for his stats, but that's that fun story I tell about Nick Pilano. Nick goes over and watches Jagr and calls back to Jimmy D and says, Jimmy, there's this great player. And he just says, Nick, we've had enough trouble with Peter Klima. I paid $10,000 for his teeth and now I can't find him. He keeps getting arrested.
Can't find
Nick.
Him or his teeth?
Yeah, no, can't find Peter.
Okay.
Peter's causing a lot of trouble. Go have a nice dinner. We're not drafting any more Czech players.
Oops. So hang on. So Jaromir Jagr could have been with Detroit?
Oh, absolutely.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, they said, don't. You're going to be draft the big star.
Well, can you imagine?
Yeah, well, think of what they were going through at the time. Like, you know, they're finding their way, and you got Primo, the big, strong Canadian guy.
We need more appearances on the show by your Jimmy Devolano impression.
It's not very good, though. No.
Oh, that's pretty good.
Neil Smith does a really good one. And you'd have to do it where he folds his hands and he'd be like, Nick, I'm going to tell you, Peter's causing a lot of trouble. Mr. Ilitch isn't very, no more Czech players.
Oh, wow.
And so that's the story. I told you the one. We said we're not taking any more either because of Pavonka and Rich Winter and Peter Bondra. So we passed on the New Jersey Secor and drafted Brad Church. So Craig Button made a great point this morning. First of all, talked about where Point was drafted, but also mentioned, you know, because they thought it was too small. Also mentioned Kucherov was drafted in the second round because of his passport. You know, hey, think about that. Like, you're talking about the premier, one of the premier players in the league, and that's only not a few years ago. But
he's the best player in that draft. The 2011 draft, which is Kucherov, went late in the second round.
Yeah,
to Tampa. Johnny Gaudreau went in the fourth round to Calgary. There was somebody, I can't remember who, went in the sixth round.
Panarin wasn't even drafted.
Yeah. Now, you know, top of the draft is Nugent Hopkins and Larson, Landeskog, like some good players, really good players. I don't think there's much argument that Kucherov's the best player in the draft.
No, and I get them mixed up all the time, but I think the line in Buffalo at the World Junior was those two and Kuznetsov, wasn't it? And Kuznetsov was drafted by Washington. Whatever it was, the line, that was a collapse for Dave Cameron, right, where Russia came back.
Yes.
That was led by Kucherov and Panarin, and I think Kuznetsov.
Some bad memories. Well, actually, it was fait accompli, Simmer, on this day in 1998. The Red Wings completed the four-game sweep of your Washington Capitals with a 4-1 Game 4 victory at the MCI Center.
Yeah.
The Wings became the first team to go back-to-back since the Penguins earlier in that decade. And for your Capitals, the end. But as you said, winning the conference finals was probably your Stanley Cup.
Yeah, I had a bit of a hope in game one or two. I can't remember Esatikin and missed on an empty net where both teams were pretty stinky, JR. But by the time we got back also to this, the lady that ran, Susan McNally or whatever her name was, ran Washington Sports. You had to, if you wanted to get season tickets or playoff tickets, sorry, you had to buy a season ticket. What had happened by game four, every Washington fan had sold out. It was a Detroit home game, and really you felt like it was going to finish. What was also nice, I went and sat on the bench there and knew Brendan Shanahan, had a chance to say hi to some guys, wanted to see the cup ceremony. Very nice and very emotional was when Vlady Konstantinov came in a wheelchair.
Right.
And I remember that was only a year previous that they had won that cup for the first time, and he ends up getting, you know, badly, badly injured in that limo accident. So, you know, it was a nice time for the Detroit Red Wings, and it was neat to sit on the bench and understand, because it didn't feel like we were close, JR. Like, it felt like it was we just had a real nice run, and a big part of that was Ole Kolzig.
Birthdays, Derek Sanderson is 75 today.
Amazing he's still alive, eh?
You know what? Yeah. I'm going to be very honest with you.
Yeah.
When I go to Hockey Reference for these birthdays.
Yeah.
And I had to, you know, and so it says right there how old somebody is.
No,
but if you click on their biography, I had to click on it because it also says the day that if they're no longer with us, that they died.
Yeah.
I wasn't sure he was still alive.
Yeah, no.
I'm being honest.
No, and really it goes
back. That's a good life lived.
Well, it was, but I think there was early to, 80s where he cleaned himself up. The organization took care of him, put him on TV. I think what he really suffered for more were physical ailments, JR, from hockey. Had a pretty good run there. And people that talk, that's before me, and that's before Bobby Orr, right? Just before, you know, he was the guy. And then
signed a huge contract in the WHA.
Exactly. And there's some old footage of him, old school, old talk shows that he used to go on, where you're both lighting up the cigarette and drinking during the late night talk show.
Those were the days, my friend.
Oh, yeah.
We thought they'd never end. Roberto Duran is 70 today.
Wow.
Steve Larmer, 60. Talk about a guy with incredible puck skills and stick skills. Steve Larmer, very underrated player.
Yeah, if you wanted to make a comparison, I'd say a little Mark Stone there.
Cool, that's a good one.
Cool old school. Always chewing the gum. No bucket, right, Stevie?
Don't remember. Good head of hair.
But just a real smart hockey player. Yeah. Like it just everything about him was super cool. He played on that team in Chicago that really came together after Belfour was signed and Chelios came out of Montreal along with Jeremy Roenick. I think was on a line with Roenick and Michel Goulet possibly.
Phil Mickelson mentioned earlier this morning is 51 today. Of course, trying to go back-to-back in the majors. U.S. Open starts tomorrow. Dinis Zubris, former Pembroke Lumber King, 43 years old today.
Yeah, remember old Zuby? Traded for him from Montreal, Trevor Linden, and gave up Richard Zednik and Jan Bulis. Not a great trade. And Zuby played there, also played in Caledon that year in the Outlaw League. Had him down to interview with Mr. Volchkov. Should have drafted Zuby, who made it to Philly right away out of Tier 2. Had a nice long career for himself.
1,300 games.
Yeah, incredible.
1,300.
Oh, yeah, just... And a strong Lithuanian fella, could not stay up on his skates, falling down all the time, couldn't shoot the puck, but he was a big boy that could skate very well and a real classy guy. But we knew the minute we got him, and George wasn't happy when he started seeing him fall down all the time. And he looked the
first
part.
Practice.
Yeah.
What do we need to do to get rid of him?
Well, not quite to that, but Trevor also showed up at about $160, and you're like, I don't know if that's the same guy from Vancouver. it was not good right away. And
is that a George McPhee? Impersonation?
Well, yeah.
As good as your Jimmy Devil, huh?
No, but I remember Zuby was a good guy. And he'd use a little short stick, JR. Once in a while when the puck would be in his wheelhouse, you'd be like, oh my God. But if you watched him, how many times he either didn't get the shot off or fall down. And once he started falling down, I knew to plan a road trip and not be at any more games with George because that's all he talked about.
Rick Nash is 37 today. Kevin Bieksa is 40 years old today. He's done a great job on TV. He really is. He's really, really good.
I don't know at home if you get any comments, but I think he's a good-looking fella, but Mira will comment on how much fun he is to watch on the telecast. He's done a nice job.
And last but not least, Bianca Andreescu is 21 years old today.
Wow.
There you go.
Only 21. Let's hope she can stay healthy.
Yes, that's the big thing as we point toward Wimbledon coming up starting in a couple of weeks.
And I'm sure the tournament itself is hoping she can stay healthy. Okay? Yep. She's a big draw now.
All right, just past 10 o'clock. That'll wrap it up for us. We want to thank you very much for listening. As always, all your input throughout the morning, and we're going to turn things over to the boys from In the Box. Coming up next, that would be Steve Lloyd, Graham Creech, and Kenny Walls. This afternoon on The Drive, it's Lee and AJ, kind of, with a soccer game sandwiched in between at 3 o'clock. Italy taking on Switzerland. Eric Macromello is back with Offside tonight at 6. His take on the business, the legal side of the world of sports. And then tonight at 9, we've got the Montreal-Vegas Game 2 here on TSN 1200. Wherever you're up to today, enjoy the weather. And we'll chat again tomorrow right here on TSN 1200. Time.